British Sky Broadcasting presents Nanny McPhee, voiced by Rena Vale, on behalf of MCS Agency. The word universal appears over a brightly coloured globe with rays of light beaming into a black sky. Another caption, working title, forms over a series of concentric circles. Daylight streams onto a high-backed, pink velvet armchair in the corner of a room.
We must begin our story, sad to say, with an empty chair. If it were not empty, we would not have a story. But it is. And we do. And it is time to tell it.
An aerial view of an imposing manor house with Gothic windows and turrets on a sunny day. Surrounded by trees, it sits in a landscape of sweeping parkland. In gold letters, the title appears, Nanny McPhee.
This is the story of my family, of my seven children, who were all very clever, but all very, very, very naughty. This is Nanny Whetstone, the 17th nanny I had hired to look after my children. She was the strictest, the toughest, and the most fearless nanny in all the land.
A woman runs from the house.
And as I went to work that morning at the local funeral parlour, I was confident in the knowledge that there was nothing, absolutely nothing, that my children could do to upset her.
They've eaten the baby!
Except that.
Cedric Brown, a tall 40-ish man with brown hair and half-moon glasses, stares at the flushed, plump woman. He flings on an Edwardian frock coat and runs out of his shop and up the path towards the house. He springs over a low wall, up a flight of stairs, and slowly approaches a door on a landing. He waits outside, then cautiously turns the doorknob. In the nursery, the children are sitting about eating chicken legs. A little boy, Sebastian, is holding a chicken leg with a baby's pink booty on the end. Cedric looks at them nervously.
Children, where's Aggie?
The children look guilty. He goes over to the table and lifts the lid of a large copper tureen. The baby is inside, lying on a layer of vegetables. He picks her up.
Look at you. You're all cabbagey. Oh, you're all gravy. As was doubtless your intention, Nanny Whetstone has resigned from her post. Now, I shall go to the agency this afternoon, and I shall hire a new nanny, and you will not drive her away as you have done with Nanny Whetstone and her predecessors.
He hands Aggie to an older girl, Tora, and leaves the room.
Come catch me up. That showed him his boss.
Stepping on a toy, he tumbles down the stairs.
3 days, 8 hours and 47 minutes. So that got rid of her 23 hours and 13 minutes quicker than the last one. I think the turning point was definitely eating the baby. Well done, Eric.
Mr. Brown, are you all right?
Perfectly, yes, I'm perfectly all right. Evangeline, not to panic you, but could you let Cook know that the new nanny has had to leave quite suddenly and I'm off to the agency to find a new one?
The young maid smiles and nods at him as he's sprawled on the bottom step. He smiles back and gets up.
Good.
Evangeline watches him with a half-smile as he walks out, embarrassed. A sign outside a shop reads, Nannies of Distinction. Cedric Brown strides up to the door and rattles the handle.
Mrs. Partridge?
We're closed.
There's been a tiny hiccup.
We're locked here!
Please, let me in.
Go away!
Listen, they didn't eat the baby. It was a chicken, actually.
There's no more!
As he shuffles off disconsolately, the flap of the letterbox is raised from within. He turns back and looks at it.
The person you need is Nanny McPhee.
Is that you, Mrs. Partridge?
The person you need is Nanny McPhee.
Excellent. I need her to start right away. I'm already late for a vital tea dance.
Nanny McPhee is not on our books. Nanny McPhee is not on anyone's books.
In the kitchen at the house...
Nanny Whetstone's gone.
Oof, there's a surprise.
Hurry it up, they're spuds.
Mr. Brown's gone to the agency. I said the children will be fine with us.
Well, they won't be fine with me. I won't have them dirty blighters in my kitchen, and that is that. I have it in writing. In writing.
Well, that's the final straw. There are no more nannies. None. All over. Finished. And I've had to cancel my vital appointment, and that's going to cause no end of trouble, I can tell you.
I told them not to. It wasn't my idea.
Don't look at me. It's not my fault.
Well, you seem intent on distressing me. Don't do that, darling, please. That's my sore bit.
A little girl, Chrissy, is hanging onto his leg.
You seem intent on distressing me, so now I'm going to distress you. You are to go to bed immediately.
Before supper.
Cedric stares at Sebastian's jam-covered face.
Without supper.
Did he say without supper?
Never mind that.
There's no more nannies.
Poor him. Poor them.
Poor them, my Aunt Fanny. They're the worstest, nastiest, horriblest. It'll be snow in August before this family's straightened out.
Dear Nanny Whetstone, I'm so very sorry. My children.
He writes a letter at his desk.
My children.
In the nursery, a teddy bear is being guillotined.
Eric, that's my teddy!
Eric, stop doing this teddy!
No! Eric, my teddy!
Quiet! You're driving your poor father to distraction!
Stop it!
Lily, what's this word?
Lovingly. He took her lovingly by the hand.
What's your book about, Evangeline?
It's about the daughter of a nice man who remarries after his wife dies and the stepmother's horrid to her.
Why doesn't the man stop her from being horrid?
Fathers all turn bad once their wives die. They don't care anymore.
Simon. Yours does.
No, he doesn't. Does he read to Chrissy like he used to? Does he play cricket with us like he used to? He doesn't even sing Lullaby to Aggie anymore. We hardly see him.
He loves you, Simon. You know that. He's just had an awful lot in his mind since...
Mother died.
Simon, the eldest boy of about 10, looks around at the other children. They look uncomfortable.
You used to be as close as anything.
Not anymore. All he cares about now is getting himself a nice new wife.
Well... I don't know if that's true or not, but perhaps it would be nice to have a new mother.
Don't you know anything about the world, Evangeline? Whoever he marries will be vile and treat us like slaves.
You don't know that.
Plenty of hard evidence for it. There isn't one single stepmother in there who's even halfway decent. They are an evil breed. Anyway, whoever likes other people's children?
I like you.
Yes, but you're a servant. You're paid to like us. That doesn't count.
Eric, a boy with glasses and thick brown hair, guillotines a doll.
I've got no work to be getting on with.
I really am hungry, Evangeline. Could he maybe bring me some secret toast and jam? All right, forget the jam. Just some secret toast.
At his desk, the children's father is resting his head on his arms. Evangeline is lighting the fire in the grate. He looks up.
Shall I plump the cushion on Mrs. Brown's chair? Only I know how you like to plump it yourself sometimes.
Oh, no, that's all right. You plump away, Evangeline.
She plumps the cushion on the pink armchair.
I was wondering if I might make Master Sebastian a wee piece of toast.
Yes, I should. No, under no circumstances, no.
I could do it secret-like.
No, they'll hear him chewing and then we're done for. No, they get nothing.
Righto, Mr. Brown.
She leaves. He picks up a newspaper and sees an advert.
The person you need is Nanny McPhee. Nanny McPhee.
It reads, the person you need is Nanny McPhee. He springs up and unfolds the paper to find figures have been cut out of the contact details.
No supper. Discipline. That's more like it.
Crook's relaxing in the kitchen. She closes her eyes. They flick open as a clockwork mouse scuttles across the floor. Her eyes shoot from side to side as the mouse crashes into a dog basket. Two bassets watch its speed under her chair. She stands up nervously.
Now you listen here, you pustular tykes. You ain't allowed in this kitchen, not now, not ever. I have it in writing.
Well, dear, the agency has closed its doors. What am I to do? Aunt Adelaide says...
Your children are out of control, Cedric.
And there was that thing she said about their needing a female influence. You know what she's like. She'll stop the allowance. Unless I marry again and give them a new mother within the month. It's a month. I mean, it's unbearable. But I had to promise. Remember we talked about what would happen without her money? Bank will take the house. There'll be debtor's prison for me. Workhouse for the older children. Goodness only knows what'll happen to little Chrissy. As for Aggie, it's unimaginable.
Cedric stares at the empty armchair. In the kitchen, Cook smashes the mouse with a rolling pin, then backs away.
Where are you? You mewling half-bakes! I'm ready for you, and I'm hard!
Behind her, Eric comes down in a plate lift and knocks her out with a frying pan. She's tied down to a table.
This is fun! We got Cook!
The person you need is Nanny
McPhee.
Eric, you're not making another bomb, are you?
Evangeline watches through the window as the children throw things at Cook, who has a gag round her mouth. Evangeline runs to Cedric's study.
They're in the kitchen!
No! You took them down for toast!
I never did! You sent them to bed with no dinner, that's what I've done it!
They look at the door, where a tall shape with a feathered hat is visible through the coloured glass.
Why don't you, I think I'd better deal
with it. Well, no, I can't.
I'll
be off.
Yes, I'll just...
Evangeline runs downstairs. The lights in the hall flicker as Cedric walks slowly down the long, narrow corridor. His eyes are fixed on the dark outline standing at the front door. On the step stands a woman in long black clothes and a hat with tall feathers. She has wispy brown hair, a wart on her nose, and a big tooth sticking out over her lower lip.
Good evening, Mr. Brown. I am Nanny McPhee.
Oh, you're... of course. Good heavens. I suppose the agency must...
I do not belong to any agency, Mr. Brown. I am a government nanny.
A government nanny? How... unusual.
May I come in?
Yes, by all means, do come in.
I understand you have extremely ill-behaved children.
No. Oh, yeah, good grief, what a suggestion. Playful.
What are your main concerns?
Concerns?
Do they go to bed when they're told?
Well, no.
Do they get up when they're told?
No, not exactly.
Do they get dressed when they're told?
Now that's a good question.
Do they say please and thank you?
In what context?
That will do to be going on with. Your children need me.
Oh, just let me go and make sure everything's in order before I introduce you and...
introduce myself. Please, Mr. Brown, go back to your newspaper.
He's baffled as she walks downstairs. The droopy-eyed dogs seem nervous as she glides past. Evangeline looks at her suspiciously. Nanny McPhee stands silently in the kitchen doorway, watching the children as they cause chaos. Cook is still tied to the table. Simon, stirring some socks in a big copper pan, looks over to the door.
Oh, look! The door's open and there's nobody there.
I am here. I am Nanny McPhee.
Oh, did somebody speak?
I didn't hear anything.
That's because nobody's there.
Then listen carefully and try to hear this. You are to stop what you are doing, put the kitchen to rights and go upstairs to bed.
Cook struggles.
Did you hear what I said?
I just had an idea. Why don't we play here in the kitchen all night long?
Lily sends some plates flying and they smash on the range.
Excellent notion.
Nanny McPhee watches them with a sinister expression. The children carry on, but gradually glance nervously in her direction. Slowly, she places her hands on her knobbly walking stick. The children look scared.
Jump, 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 jump.
Scary Nanny McPhee raises her walking stick. Simon stops staring and Cook whimpers. In his study, their father puts down his paper.
Government nanny?
Nanny McPhee bangs her stick on the floor.
What has she done? She's done something to us!
They went in the park! They went in the park! I can't stop!
She'll bang her stick!
I'm going to be sick!
It must be magic!
Suddenly, the children are doing everything in fast motion.
Say please.
I never say please.
Very well.
Please!
Please!
Don't turn naggy!
Wait!
Daddy! Actually, Simon, would you? Because this baby's gonna blow!
Maggie's gonna go in the stomp pot!
Put her back, Chrissy! Am I gonna say please then?
Nanny McPhee turns back.
Take Aggie off me!
Please? Nanny McPhee.
Simon glares at her.
Chrissy, don't!
Nanny!
Take Maggie out!
No, Nanny! Nanny!
Simon!
I can't stop myself!
Please, Nanny McPhee.
I'm going to jump!
Nanny McPhee crashes her stick on the floor. Green goo explodes over Eric and baby Aggie's thrown in the air. A puff of green smoke surrounds Nanny, then disappears. Sebastian stares, amazed.
Blimey.
Up to bed, please.
Obediently, the children file out of the kitchen. Simon is the last to leave and looks up at Nanny suspiciously as he goes.
Good night, Mrs. Blatherwick. Good night, Evangeline.
Good night, Nanny McPhee.
You know, when Mr. Brown said no dinner, I thought they'd be down here in a trice. They've been ever so quiet.
Don't you fret. They don't dare come in this kitchen. I have it in writing.
Mrs. Blatherwick, the cook, and Evangeline are sitting by the table in the tidy kitchen.
You have to be careful with it, Aggie. It's Mama's rattle, and it's the only thing we've got of hers.
Tora holds Aggie while Eric brushes his teeth. Simon enters the bathroom.
What on earth are you doing?
I'm getting ready for bed.
That's what she told us to do.
And since when have we decided to do what we're told?
Since we nearly got Cook blown up and Aggie boiled.
May I just remind you of something? We got rid of the last 17 nannies. We're getting rid of this one too.
Nanny McPhee goes into the children's nursery and walks between the beds. They stop jumping about and get into their beds. Standing at one end of the bedroom, she makes her way slowly down the aisle between the two rows of beds, glancing from side to side as she goes. Sitting on his bed, Simon watches as she bends to pick something up.
You must feel at such a disadvantage, Nanny McPhee.
In what way?
We know your name. You don't know us. Pleased to make your acquaintance. I'm Oglington Fartworthy.
How do you do?
That's F-A-R-T, Fartworthy.
Booger McHorse Fanny. Nickers A. Muffin.
Sandra.
Bum! I'm Bum!
Oh,
bosoms.
Bum! You can't be Bum, Aggie. Sebastian's Bum. You're Poop.
Poop Bum.
Can't be Poop and Bum.
Nanny McPhee ignores the other children and stops by Aggie's cot. She looks straight into the baby's eyes as Aggie chews on a silver rattle with bells on it. Blonde-haired Aggie smiles at her.
Good night, Agatha.
The baby looks away and Nanny walks back between the beds.
Good night, Sebastian. Good night, Tora. Good night, Christiana. Good night, Lily. Good night, Eric. Good night, Simon.
Simon sits cross-legged on his bed and glares at her.
There is something you should understand about the way I work. When you need me, but do not want me, then I must stay. When you want me, but no longer need me, then I have to go. It's rather sad, really, but there it is.
We will never want you.
Then I will never go. Good night, children.
She leaves and the room goes dark.
How did she know our names? No one ever knows our names.
Magic.
Witchcraft. It doesn't matter. We're getting rid of her tomorrow.
In his study, Cedric is asleep in his chair. Nanny McPhee suddenly appears in front of him.
And be. What? What?
I did knock.
Of course you did. You weren't just creeping up at me, for heaven's sake. What a suggestion.
The children are all in bed and asleep.
Good. Really? Good grief.
I shall see myself to my room. Good night, Mr. Brown.
No. Wait. What are your terms?
Your children require 5 lessons. Lesson 1, to go to bed when they're told, is complete. As for my terms, I take Sunday afternoons off. Good night.
He watches her as she goes up the dark stairs. On a bright sunny morning, butterflies are hovering over flowers and a big pink pig is eating grass in a field by a treehouse. Nanny McPhee is in the children's bedroom.
Time to get up.
Nobody stirs.
I shall give you 30 minutes to be up, washed, dressed, teeth cleaned, beds made, and out into the garden for some healthful fresh air before breakfast. Lessons start at 9. Sharp.
I don't know about you lot, but I want to stay in bed.
Sebastian, run the thermometer under the hot tap, would you? Chrissy, chalk. Eric, crayons. Lily, pepper.
How do you know she won't do something horrid to us?
I worked it out. She's a trained hypnotist. That's how she made us do all those things last night. Just don't look directly at her and she won't be able to hypnotise us.
Morning, Mr. Brown.
I'm off to work early this morning. There's a rush on at the mortuary. Some bout of influenza at Archery is carrying off all the old folks. Still, what's bad for them? Good for us.
Poor things.
Well, no, that too. That too, of course. Yeah.
Evangeline takes the breakfast tray and goes.
That's odd. She normally says, have a nice day at work, Mr. Brown, or don't forget your jacket, Mr. Brown, if it's cold out. Very odd.
Most peculiar.
I did knock.
Did you? I didn't hear.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to...
He points at the pink armchair.
Never mind.
I believe the children will be staying in bed today.
The children? What, all day? Are they ill? What's wrong?
Nothing is wrong. I know precisely what to do. Please leave it to me.
Well, you did manage them splendidly last night. If they are under the weather, though, do give them what they want. Ice cream and jelly and such like. My late wife was very particular in that regard. If ever they were ill, she used to wait on them hand and foot. Even if they weren't very ill at all.
I shall be sure to give them exactly what they need.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'll just be off to work then.
He leaves and Nanny McPhee makes a small bow to the pink chair.
Remember, everyone, don't look in her eyes.
She goes back to the bedroom where the children are still in bed.
Dear me.
I can't get up. We're ill.
Cuts in our noses.
And camper cunk.
We think it might be the measles.
Got music.
Good heavens. Then there is, of course, no question of your getting up. I'm very sorry to have to tell you all that you'll have to stay in bed.
The children have painted red spots on their faces. She bangs her stick on the floor and gold sparks fly out. She leaves.
I don't feel well.
I think I've got a temperature. Don't be daft.
Simon, I can't get up.
You must have looked at her then.
I did not look.
I was under the covers the whole time, Simon. I can't get up either.
I can't get up.
I'm stuck like
glue. No. I'm stuck too.
Hypnosis, eh?
Bang goes that theory.
Cedric arrives at work.
Morning.
He goes in, hangs up his coat and top hat. As he walks by a couple of coffins covered in cloth, two men fling back the cloths and sit upright.
Morning, Mr. B!
Good morning, Mr. Giles. Mr. Ween.
Thought we'd get you that time.
No, not this time.
Nice tea dance, Mr. B.
Oh, lovely, I shouldn't wonder.
No, I didn't even get there. Disaster. Children, you know.
We do know. We've said it before and we'll say it again, Mr. B. It's not funerals as you should be in the business of.
It's christenings.
Cedric goes into another room and pulls the curtain. A man's body in a dark suit is laid out on a bench. Cedric opens a letter.
Good morning. Just excuse me a moment, would you?
Cedric, let me not beat about the bush. Your children are out of control. You need a wife and your children need a mother. If you do not remarry by the end of the month, steps will have to be taken.
Oh dear. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. What's your wife like? Never mind. Less than a month to go, there's nothing for it.
It'll have to be that woman.
The dreadful one. Mr. Giles, do you recollect that enthusiastic lady, Mrs. Swiftly, was it? Was it Mrs. Thaddeus something or other last year?
Mrs. Thaddeus Crickley?
Oh, don't. Oh,
Mr. Brown, you are a saint. You have a lovely look of kindness about you.
What I wouldn't give for a man like you, Mr. Brown, in my hour of need.
That one?
Yes, that one.
We buried Mr. Crickley last autumn. Mm. Poor devil.
He was happy to go.
Yeah, and he was her third.
He was.
You don't happen to know if she ever remarried, you know, number four.
Mr. Brown, you're not thinking what I think you're thinking, are you, Mr. Brown?
Good grief, no, 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 no. What a thought. No.
Oh,
measles medicine to be administered once an hour.
Actually, I'm not sure it is measles.
How could it be anything other? The chalky white faces, the livid spots, the temperatures of 120 degrees. I've seen it time and again. Measles. Definitely.
Nanny McPhee pours thick black tonic into a large spoon from a huge bottle with measles written on it.
Open.
Simon, don't!
I'm not taking that.
Then you will not get any better. Believe me.
It's moving!
Open wide. Wider.
Simon gulps down the tonic and pulls a face. He tries to spit it out.
Spit it out!
You'll have to swallow it sooner or later, so I suggest you get it over with. Very good. Who's next?
Evangeline's reading on the balcony.
Nanny McPhee, you startled me. It was that choir. I just got to practising my sounds. Lily's teaching me to read.
That is good.
Oh, they're all good. Underneath it all.
A favourite of yours?
Don't know. I haven't finished it yet. Stepmother's a bit of a horror though, ain't she?
Oh, indeed.
It's a pity stories aren't ever about real people. This one seems a farm girl, but I'll bet a pound to a penny he finds out she's really an educated lady. And then he falls for her.
You must read it and find out.
You wouldn't love her if she couldn't read. You'd think her stupid and worthless. And beneath him...
Evangeline leaves. In the kitchen, Mrs. Blatherwick, with her frizzy red hair, is kneading dough. Nanny McPhee appears by the table. Mrs. Blatherwick doesn't notice her at first.
Buttered spuds for lunch, with boiled beef, apple pie and custard.
I think the children will be requiring something a little more austere today.
Aus what?
The children are not quite themselves, Mrs. Blatherwick.
Court. Well, that means jellies and ice cream and raspberry cordial and God only knows what else. Well, I'd better get cracking then. Evangeline! Where is that lump? It'll be snow in August before that one's there when you need her.
Calm yourself, Mrs. Blatherwick. I'm in charge today. I understand that you were once in the armed forces.
Oh, it was that. Cooked at a training camp in Gloucestershire, I did, and I kept those boys strong and all, I did.
I'm sure you did. Perhaps a broth of some sort for the children. You must be an expert.
Best thin potato gruel with peelings in. That always got them groaning, but by golly, it kept them strong.
Are you well supplied with peelings?
Mrs. Blatherwick ponders, then grins and picks up a bucket.
These will do. Only a day old.
She tips the bones and peelings onto the table.
A bit of gristle for flavour. Ever so tasty.
She ladles up broth in the bedroom.
Get that down, ya. There's a lot of goodness in a turkey neck. That'll put the airs back on your chest. Oh, smell that. That is the smell that forged this empire. That pong is the pong of conquerors. All right, men. As you were.
She salutes and marches out.
They actually are starving us. I wonder how long it will take for us all to die.
Lily sitting up in bed with her bowl of grey broth. She looks miserable. At work, Cedric is creeping through a dark office. He opens a filing drawer and takes out a card.
Quickly.
quickly. Mrs. Summer, quickly.
The children are lying in their beds. Evangeline comes in.
Have you lazy lot been in bed all day?
Evangeline!
You've been doing measles, haven't you?
Situation's very simple, Evangeline. The nanny, who in my opinion is a witch, made us ill and fed us boiled down toads all day.
Nanny McPhee is not a witch, Eric, and you're very naughty to say so. I'm sure she knew what she was doing. She must be fully trained.
Yes, but as what?
I'm unbelievably hungry, Evangeline. Can you please get us something decent to eat?
Did you just say please?
Please, Evangeline.
Well, children, now you've been in bed all day, but that you're better now.
It wasn't our fault.
I'm sure it wasn't anybody's fault, Simon. Good heavens. You can't help it if you're ill. But you're better now.
Nanny McPhee taps her stick on the floor and gold dust appears. The children all start to sit up in their beds and smile.
Papa?
Yes, Chrissy?
Now that we're better, can we get up?
Can we get up, please?
Evangeline looks around, amazed. One of the ugly warts on Nanny McPhee's face disappears. Tora stares at her.
Of course you can.
Read to us.
I have my letter writing to do. I'll read to you tomorrow. Good night, my dears.
They're all disappointed.
Evangeline, would you be so kind as to ask cook to make the children some scrambled eggs on toast? I'm sure they'd all like a little supper now they're feeling so much better.
I'll do it myself, Nanny McPhee.
Didn't she have two of those bumpy things?
The word is wart. Traditionally associated with witches, as it happens.
Well, one of them's gone.
Cedric is in his study reading Mrs. Selma Quickly's card. Nanny McPhee materialises in front of his desk.
I did knock.
Of course you did.
Lesson two, to get up when they're told, is complete.
Of course. Very good, thank you.
Good night, Mr. Brown.
Nanny McPhee?
Yes, Mr. Brown.
Didn't you used to have two...
Awkwardly, he points at his face.
Never mind. It's my imagination.
She gives him a puzzled look and goes. Another bright morning, Evangeline comes into the study.
There was a telegram, Mr. Brown.
She takes his breakfast tray and leaves. He reads the telegram.
Oh, my goodness.
He strides into the dining room where the children are eating.
Nanny McPhee. Good. Right, I have an announcement. Yes, well, your great Aunt Adelaide is coming for tea today.
Aunt Adelaide is vile and vicious.
She's as blind as a bat. And we are convalescing, for heaven's sake.
No, that's enough. I don't want to hear anything bad about Aunt Adelaide. She pays the rent.
She scares me.
Well, come on now. Well, she's only coming for tea. I'm sure you'll all be very good and put your best clothes on, and Nanny McPhee will keep you all in order, won't she, Nanny McPhee?
I shall do my best, sir, in consideration of the fact that today is Sunday, and as I'm sure you remember, I am off duty this afternoon.
Off duty? Well, you're off duty when... Well, no, you can't be off duty. I need you. I mean, they need you.
Sadly, I shall be leaving at noon. Thereafter, I'm sure the children will do exactly as they're told, won't you, children?
A naughty smile from Simon. In the study...
Listen to this, dear. Aunt Adelaide says, I am coming with the express intention of easing your financial burden. Maybe she thought the better of my having to remarry. Cost of a wedding and so forth. Perhaps I won't have to go through with it after all.
He smiles at the empty armchair. A black carriage, pulled by four black horses, charges along the drive, passing Nanny McPhee as she strides along the path with her walking stick and basket. In the nursery, Chrissy struggles to put on a white dress.
They're itchy.
Well, we promised, so that's that. Tora's right. I think we should do exactly as we're told. We've been told to put our best clothes on, haven't we? Right. Well, I'm going to put my best clothes on.
The pig.
Simon, no!
Yeah, the pig!
You get the pig! Oh, please, don't!
I'll get the donkey!
The carriage stops in front of the house and Cedric goes down the steps to meet it.
Aunt Adelaide, welcome back.
Where are you?
Here I am, Aunt Adelaide.
Don't drag me so. Looking very peely wally, Cedric. Where's my tea? I must have tea this instant.
Of course, this way, at once.
I smell damp.
No, at least not noticeably.
Damp in the house. That would account for your pallid complexion.
What a lovely hat.
A gift from the Duchess of Kent. She has taste. I've always hated this room.
Milk?
Certainly not. Filthy stuff. Most unhealthy.
Sugar?
6, if you please. Let me not beat about the bush, Cedric. The problem with you is that you have too many children.
Oh, that.
Don't interrupt. I always said that your wife, my poor, weak-minded niece, had no sense of proportion. However, I know where my duties lie. I gave her my word that I would help. And as you know, Cedric, my word is my law. I now propose to help you further.
Oh, thank you, Aunt Adelaide. Thank you.
Don't interrupt. Sit down. Now, this is my proposal. I shall relieve you of one of your children and give it a home with me at Stitch Manor.
A flash of lightning. Chrissy listens by the door, horrified.
It will require sacrifice on my part. I realise that. But as my sainted father always said, duty, Adelaide, always duty.
But, Aunt Adelaide, you mustn't. I really can't possibly...
Thank me enough. I know. I realise you must feel quite overwhelmed by the benefits of such a plan. As to your fortunate daughter, for it must, of course, be a girl and not one of those other things. She will receive private tuition in literature, history, deportment, and above all, elocution. If there's one thing I won't stand for, it's loose vowels.
Tora and Chrissy.
But what did Papa say? He must have just told her not to even think of it.
He didn't say anything.
Come on. Let's find the others.
Aunt Adelaide, I must speak frankly. There really is absolutely no question of your taking...
Hush now! I'm used to taking responsibility for other people's mistakes. Now where is the bulk of your offspring?
Cedric and Aunt Adelaide are in the garden. Lily and Sebastian hide behind a bush with their aunt's hat. Aunt Adelaide spots the pig.
Here we are!
The pig's wearing makeup and a string of pearls. Aunt Adelaide puts on a pair of pince-nez.
It was a bee.
Good heavens.
A big bee.
Cedric knocks them out of her hand.
Gone now. Phew.
You're not well, Cedric. The sooner you find a good wife, the better.
This should put her off wanting any of you girls.
Speak up, girl. Oh, what an unfortunate face. All those bristles. It might be very hard to get her decently betrothed. Do you not have a more comely girl?
Adelaide peers at the pig. The basset hounds trot down the path in dresses and big hats, followed by chickens wearing lace.
Perhaps around the front of the house.
Cedric looks for the children as Aunt Adelaide goes. Chrissy puts the hat on the donkey.
Chrissy, hurry up!
The children pull on the donkey with a rope. It snaps.
Tie it, Chrissy!
Stop! She'll
see you!
Cedric, I had no idea that you had produced such an unattractive batch of females. I shall leave directly. Get my hat.
Your hat? So soon? Really? No, you can't. I'll get it.
Do it!
As Aunt Adelaide calls her footman, Chrissy and Eric come tearing round the corner. Chrissy crashes into her aunt.
Aha! Oh, yes. You'll do perfectly. A little timid, perhaps, but we'll soon knock that out of you.
Come on. I can't do any harm to try.
I can't seem to find your... What are you doing?
This is the chosen one. Get her ready.
The chosen one? Chrissy?
Oh, Aunt Adelaide, you're not... Cedric, and do as you're told.
Nanny McPhee. We need you. Nanny McPhee, please. We need you.
Where is my hat?
The donkey trots past in the large flowery hat. The children watch from around the corner as Aunt Adelaide peers through her glasses at the donkey chewing at some leaves.
My hat! How dare you!
Nanny McPhee stands by the gate and stamps her stick. Cecile, the donkey, looks up and smiles at Aunt Adelaide. She smiles back.
What a merry game!
Yoo-hoo.
My, what a pretty girl you are!
Cecile stands up on her hind legs and, dressed in a kilt and shawl, does a little dance.
Oh, this is the girl for me. Such poise, such gaiety. There you are, stop.
Yes, madam.
I'm taking this child with me. Get her ready.
Cecile throws a kiss at Aunt Adelaide.
Very well, madam.
Silly time.
Adelaide goes back in the house.
Do not forget that someone has to go with your great aunt, and it cannot be the donkey, can it?
Cecile is back on all fours, nosing at the ground. The children are up in the treehouse.
Well, I'm the eldest girl. I'll go.
No, I've always known I was destined for tragedy. I'll go.
Eggie, go!
Don't be silly, Eggie. You're not even a whole girl yet.
No, she wanted me. I'll go.
You can't all go.
Through a window of the treehouse, Simon sees Nanny McPhee looking back at him through a round window high up in a turret of the house. Aunt Adelaide and Cedric are in the drawing room.
Well, I am entirely satisfied. I will keep my word, Cedric, if you will keep yours. You must give those children a mother before the month is out.
No.
What?
Aunt Adelaide, you cannot order me around, and you certainly cannot take any of my children away from me.
I...
Your carriage awaits, madam.
Nanny McPhee.
Is the chosen one seated?
Indeed she is.
Good.
All is prepared.
Which chosen one? What's prepared?
Cedric, in view of this afternoon's happy outcome, I'm willing to overlook that last unattractive outburst.
Nanny McPhee!
Off we go, Hewitt!
She can't take the donkey. Now, what have you done?
I have done nothing, sir. The children have decided amongst themselves.
Decided what? What do you mean?
There you are, dear.
Not little Chrissy.
Cedric runs out of the house.
Chrissy!
Cedric tears after the carriage as it makes off down the drive.
Chrissy!
You better tell me your name, little girl.
Cedric cuts through a field of sheep.
Cassandra!
Don't be shy, my dear. What is your name? Sit up straight and tell me your name.
No! Cassandra!
Chrissy throws herself at her father and he lifts her up and hugs her. The other children surround him.
And who's...
Back in the carriage.
Evangeline. My name's Evangeline.
Aunt Adelaide peers through her glasses at her and smiles. At the house, Nanny McPhee stamps her stick.
And what a pretty name it is, too.
Evangeline.
With Chrissy still holding her father, the little group watches sadly as the carriage drives off into the distance. As it drives through the hilly countryside, the carriage is framed in the oval of a coloured window in the children's bedroom.
Time for bed.
Thank you for saving me, Nanny McPhee. Mm-mm. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nanny McPhee nods at Sebastian, then looks over at Simon sitting on his bed. He turns to her and smiles. Another wart vanishes from her chin. Simon gets into bed.
Papa's going to let her take me.
No, Christiana. Your father would never have allowed it.
All the children are in bed.
Good night, children.
Good night, Alexi.
She goes. Tora sits up in the darkened room.
She hasn't got any warts at all now. Do you think she's using some sort of cream?
Tora looks puzzled. Light shines from the windows of the house at night. Alone in the study, a thoughtful Cedric is staring at a clock on the mantelpiece. He turns round, slowly paces the room, and looks about him. He turns back and comes face to face with Nanny McPhee.
Thank you, Nanny McPhee. You were a tremendous help today.
Not at all. I think you will find that lesson three, to get dressed when they're told, is complete.
Just to get dressed when they're told? Well, I think they've learnt a great deal more than that.
I have 5 lessons to teach. What lessons they learn is entirely up to them. Good night, Mr. Brown.
Nanny McPhee?
Yes, Mr. Brown.
She will be all right, won't she? Evangeline, I mean. I can't help being concerned. Aunt Adelaide can be so, well, you saw.
She will certainly be all right.
Good. I suppose she volunteered to go, did she? Couldn't wait to be shot at us, I imagine, could she?
Not quite. It was Simon's idea. He knew Evangeline might like to educate herself and that her going would save Christiana. He's a very clever boy, you know.
Good heavens. Simon, eh? Well, good for him. Quick thinking.
Good night, Mr. Brown.
Left alone at his desk, Cedric sees some letters. The edge of an envelope is sticking out under the blotter. He picks it up. It's addressed to Mrs. Selmer Quickly.
So that's it, then. I shall have to marry Quickly.
He closes his eyes with dread. Daytime, and white cliffs form a coastline against a blue sea. A purple and orange kite flies high above the water with Simon on the beach below holding onto the strings. Nanny McPhee and the other children are on the pebble beach. She watches Sebastian, who has a biscuit in his mouth, trying to untangle the knot of his kite strings. She gently waves her hand, and the red and blue kite takes off into the air.
Children, your father has asked me to tell you there's a Mrs. Quickly coming for tea tomorrow.
Nanny McPhee?
Yes, sweetheart.
Can you stop Papa from marrying her horrible stepmother?
I'm afraid not.
Even if you wanted to?
Even if I wanted to, I cannot interfere with affairs of the heart. Perhaps Simon could talk to him about it.
He won't listen.
Simon turns away to watch his kite. Nanny McPhee looks on thoughtfully. Cedric's at work. Mr. Giles looks in.
You have a visitor, Mr. Brown. An especially eager visitor, Mr. Brown.
Cedric looks nervous and runs his hand over his hair. Mr. Giles and Mr. Ween leave as Cedric's back is turned. Simon turns up.
Quickly by name. Oh, Simon, my boy. Oh, come in. Come on, I won't bite.
Father, there's something we want to ask you.
Of course. Of course, anything at all, ask away.
Who is Mrs. Quickly?
Good heavens, such a face. She's a friend. She's a friend.
Just a friend?
Well, let's face it, my boy, it's not exactly any of your business, is it now?
It is, if you're going to make us have her as a new mother.
So, who said anything about a new mother?
It is true, isn't it? You are going to marry her, aren't you?
You go too far, Simon. It is not your place to question...
But I didn't...
Don't contradict me!
I'm not, I'm just...
You are children. You do not understand the adult world. You know, there are certain things that... Certain things... You will leave me this instant. Go home at once. Go, home.
You never listen!
Simon sweeps out, leaving his father utterly miserable. Simon runs back up the path and into the house. Simon tears up the stairs to the top floor. He slows down as he approaches a door in the narrow corridor.
Nanny McPhee? Nanny McPhee?
He turns and starts to walk away. Slowly, the door opens and he turns back. He enters and walks up a flight of stairs into an empty room with a sloping roof. He goes into the turret and stands in the circle of sunlight cast by a round window. He gazes around the room, then walks over to the other side where Nanny McPhee's stick is leaning against the wall. He looks around, then carefully takes hold of it and taps it on the floor.
Hello, Simon. Can I help you?
I did knock.
I know. I heard you.
She's sitting in an armchair in the turret next to a tea table.
May I be of assistance?
We need you to, I mean, you saved Chrissy. And so, you're on our side, is what I mean. Aren't you?
You saved Chrissy, and I do not take sides.
We need you to help us get rid of this woman, Mrs. Quickly.
It will not surprise you to hear that I cannot agree to that, Simon.
Then at least will you promise to let us do whatever we have to do to get rid of her?
Are you prepared to accept the consequences?
Yes.
You promise?
Yes, yes, absolutely, I promise.
Then I will, as you put it, let you do whatever you have to do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mrs. Quickly arrives at the house.
Look at them! Will you just look at them? Oh, the little small things.
Children, this is Mrs. Quickly.
Oh, you mustn't start off on so formal a footing. You must call me Auntie Silma. Oh, dear me, one does work up such a thirst in this heat.
Oh, tea. Yes, of course. Do go through. I'll,
Believe these dear creatures? How can you ask it of me?
She sprints up the steps to the house.
Oh, the heart of the house.
Yes, yes.
The old bachelor's den.
Isn't it
enchanting? Yes. Oh, you read all those books.
Well,
Clever.
Why don't you take my chair, by far the most comfortable.
Thank you. Oh, but what have we here? I see there is already provision for a lady. How thoughtful you are. What a gentleman.
She nearly sits on Eric's arrow.
Oh, wait. Just let me make it comfy for you.
Too precious. Here in the centre of the male dominion, an oasis of feminine charm and elegance.
There, just as I thought. It's dusty, isn't it? Need a good old thump. There. All thumped and ready to go.
There you go again. Nothing is too much trouble for you.
I remember observing upon that very characteristic on the Saturday we buried Mr. Quigley. Even in the state of my demented grief, I said to my friend Miss Letitia Carter, you remember her, a pinker complexion than my own. She takes a little too much sun for her age. And anyway, I said, kindness seems to be second nature to him. He is a perfect gentleman. There's something so masculine and yet retiring in his manner, you could almost...
Cedric throws himself at her. A huge spider crawls through her hair on the end of a stick that the children are holding through the window. He puts it in a box.
I do beg your pardon. I don't know what came over me.
I do. I understand. I never took you for such. But now I see it. Passion is clearly your nature, too. I feel it. Who would have thought we were such kindred spirits? Passion is my life. In fact, Mr. Brown, what is life without it? A grey wheel of habits spinning idly on.
She eats a sandwich, not noticing the worm wriggling in it. Sebastian giggles under the desk. She reaches for another one.
This is no time for food, Mrs. Quigley.
Selma?
I couldn't possibly swallow it under the circumstances.
You're tempestuous, Mr. Brown.
Tea?
Yes, tea. We must blanket the raw impulse with that reliable beverage.
There's frog spawn in her cup. He opens the teapot and a toad jumps out.
Toad? I could have spode. Tasteful. Anyway, so essential for upholding the norm.
But no, you don't want that!
How right you are. You sin to my inmost self. What is tea when we can drink from the nectar of our emotions? Let the common herd drink tea. Our souls need a more divine libation.
A jelly on a spade hovers over her. Cedric knocks her over to avoid it and they land on the floor.
You mad fool! I say, no, no, not here amongst the cutlery.
He spots Eric sparking a cable that's trailed across the room and attached to the door handle. Mrs. Quigley struggles to her feet and tries to leave.
Must escape before all is lost.
Wait!
He pins her against the door, grabs the handle and trembles with a shock.
You? Oh, inflamed! I was an only widow hope to best you. What defences does she have? All it takes is one of the questions, yes. Cedric, and I'm yours.
I feel
it. Ask me, or you'll lose me forever.
Oh, no. Absolutely.
Say it. Say it. Say it. Say it.
No!
You are a cad! Abandoned a cad!
Yeah!
Pa's coming.
Eric and Sebastian come out of the bathroom to see their father. He walks into the room and stands in the doorway. Solemnly, he looks round at the smiling children sitting with Nanny McPhee.
She's gone. The only person in the whole world who stands between all of us. And total ruin. And she's gone.
What's ruin?
There's no time to mince words. I can't support my own family. I never have been able to. There are so many of you. But you were all so delicious. And when Aggie came along and your mother was so ill, I said to her, I think we're going to have to stop now, dear. And she said... I know.
Simon and Tora gaze at him guiltily. He looks back at them with a sad smile.
Well, the fact of the matter is, your great aunt Adelaide has been supporting us for years with a monthly allowance. A little while ago, she told me that I had to remarry or the allowance would stop. This woman today was my last chance. Our last chance.
Ours?
When the money stops, the house will be taken. Some of you will perhaps be put into the workhouse. Some will be put into the care of others. I don't know how many of you will be allowed to stay together.
They're all gloomy. He gets to his feet.
I'm sorry to have failed you, children. You deserve so much better.
He leaves the room. Lily turns to Nanny McPhee.
Do something.
What would you suggest?
Change what happened. Bang your stick. Make it undo itself.
I cannot. These were your own actions. Simon promised that you would accept the consequences.
What should we do? Help us, Nanny McPhee. Tell us what to do.
You must undo it for yourselves.
How? How?
Think. You are very clever, children. Think.
Daytime at Mrs. Quickly's pink cottage. She's sprawled on the couch.
Kane, I'll let he was in a maddened condition. He couldn't keep his hands off me, but I held firm. I said, Cedric, I have my reputation to uphold. It's marriage or nothing. What do you take me for, some common tart? Not for me, I bloated.
No, some common tart. You said
that... What's that knocking?
It might be him.
I fumble with my fast... Oh.
Mrs. Quickly, we're very sorry about the tea you had with our father.
Typical of a man, sending his little ones to do the dirty work.
No, he doesn't know we're... What I mean is he very much wants to marry you.
It was all too clear what he wanted, and marriage had nothing to do with it. No wonder there's so many of you.
Wait! Father wasn't being rude. No one on earth could be less rude. He was just trying to protect you from all the naughty things we were doing.
The toad in the teapot.
And the wormy sandwiches.
That was my idea! I mean, my fault.
I have no idea to what you can be referring. Don't try to make excuses for him. He's a flounder and a gad.
No, he's not. He's a good man. He was just trying to save us. Because if he doesn't marry, well, all the money will go and we'll be thrown out onto the streets.
Money? What money?
Our great aunt Adelaide's money.
Lady Adelaide Stitch. Lady? Mr. Brown!
Mrs. Quickly!
Your children have explained everything to me.
Explained?
That their little tricks during tea was just a natural result of their motherless condition. That they only need a woman's presence in the house to calm their tempers, and that you could benefit quite as much from that comforting presence, pathetic and lonely as you are. And all it takes is one little question, Cedric.
Puzzled, he sees Simon kneel down behind her.
Who? Oh, yes, of course. Just give me, yes. Mrs. Quickly. Yes, I mean, Selma. Would you do me the honour of becoming my... of becoming my...
wife.
Exactly, wife, that's the word.
Yes! Oh, yes, Cedric! Off you go now, dears. Let Daddy have a little moment to himself with your new mummy.
Later, Cedric goes to the children's room where Nanny McPhee is preparing them for bed. Simon and the others sit up when he comes in. Cedric sits on Tora's bed and lifts Chrissy onto his lap.
I'm sorry. I should have told you. You can see that now. If I'd discussed matters with you beforehand, we wouldn't be in all this awful mess, would we?
No, it was our fault. We should have known you had a good reason for getting married again.
Well, whatever happens, at least this way we'll all be together. That's what matters most, isn't it? And I promise I'll never hide anything that affects us from you again. I can see you're all more than capable of understanding it.
Papa?
Yes, my boy?
Do you think Mama still thinks about us where she is?
I'm sure she does. I know she does. Now, Chrissy, why don't you choose us a story?
Nanny McPhee waits for Cedric in the corridor.
Lesson 4 is complete.
Oh, Lesson four.
To listen. Well done.
She turns and walks away down the corridor carrying her stick. Moonlight shines through the window of the children's bedroom. Cedric is standing behind the pink chair in his study, staring into space. The lights of the huge house shine out in the nighttime darkness. A bright pink wedding cake on a sunny day. Mrs. Quickly, dressed as Bo Peep in a pink flouncy dress and flowery hat, walks arm in arm with her friend Letty in Cedric's garden, dotted about with coloured marquees and parasols.
The big day! I do love my weddings.
Mr. Brown, what's he really like?
No, I don't. Keen's mustard to tie the knot, though. Couldn't sort all this out quick enough for him. Only got the sheep dip yesterday. But he's easily controlled. It's more than can be said for his nasty little brood.
However will you manage him, Sam?
Oh, I've got a few tricks up my sleeve. Never you mind. I've started off by giving them a good clean-up. Oh, don't I look lovely?
Nanny McPhee gets the children ready.
Sebastian, your top button is undone. Lily, you have a little hair caught in your crook. Eric, help her, please. Your father will be down in a moment.
Now, that is an improvement. Betty, don't keep a lookout.
I say, whatever your name is, don't suppose you could give me a second on my own with the little darling?
Nanny McPhee walks off.
Now, my dears, there's going to be some changes made round here. I'm in charge of this household now, and while I'm in charge, you children will behave. Do you hear? Behave. Behave. And we're not having any of that nasty noise all the way through my nice wedding either.
She grabs Aggie's rattle.
Shut up.
Simon tries to snatch it back.
Naughty.
It's our mother's rattle. Give it back.
I'm your mother now.
She snaps it in half.
Time to adapt.
The children, dressed in pale green and white with wide hats, stare at her, shocked. Nanny McPhee watches behind a pillar. Sebastian sees his father.
Papa, Mrs. Quickly.
Yoo-hoo, Cedric. I realise the bride and groom shouldn't meet until the ceremony, but after all, you and I are old hands at this, are we not?
He shakes her outheld hand. Letty.
She's here!
Mrs. Blatherwick rushes in and the three women fight to get to the door first.
Where's the woman, then?
Aunt Adelaide, how lovely...
Shut up! Where's the woman, Cedric?
Aunt Adelaide, may I present my fiancé, Mrs. Selma Quickly. Selma, this is Lady Stitch.
Your ladyness, welcome,
if I may be so bold, to our humble, nay, lowly festivities. You shower glory upon us from above. The very air about you shines with aboveness.
A gracious welcome, I must say. Rise, my dear.
And here are the children in their shepherdess outfits. Well, that's the girls, obviously, the boys. Well, actually, I'm not quite sure what they are, but anyway, you can see.
Oh, keep up, will you?
She calls out, and a girl dressed in a long blue silk dress and broad-brimmed cream-coloured hat walks gracefully down the long corridor. The children stare at her in wonder, and Cedric smiles warmly as she approaches.
Who's that? It's a princess. A fairy princess.
It's Evangeline.
Straight back. Remember your vows. May I present my adopted daughter, Miss Evangeline Stitch?
Cedric and Evangeline gaze at each other.
What are we doing milling about in this dreary vestibule? Sherry, this instant.
Might I beg the honour of pouring the privileged schooners myself?
Delectable to see you again, madam.
Blinky now.
And how nice to see the young people.
Welcome back, Evangeline. You look well. Are you well?
I am most content. You must be very happy to be marrying again.
Oh, yes, I'm... How did you put it? Most content. Of course. Good grief.
I am so glad. Pray, excuse me.
Are you sure it's Evangeline? It doesn't look anything like her.
Nonsense. She's always looked like that.
The musicians start to play out in the garden. Letty walks Selma along the garden path. They have two lambs with them, one dyed yellow and the other pink. Cedric waits miserably at the top of the path by the vicar. The guests rise, with Nanny McPhee holding Aggie. Mr. Giles and Mr. Ween give Cedric a thumbs up, then turn to each other with a look of astonishment. Mrs. Blatherwick watches Selma with disapproval. Simon's with Nanny McPhee.
What can we do? We've got to help him. There has to be another way.
Behave. Behave.
You must do as you're told.
Behave. Behave.
Lesson number 5, Simon. You must do exactly as you're told.
Selma joins Cedric in front of the vicar. Simon watches Aggie as she speaks.
Behave.
Behave.
Please be seated.
There isn't a beehive. What do you mean?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here together in the sight of God and in the face of this congregation to join together this man and this woman in holy matrimony, which is an honorable estate instituted of God in the time of man's innocence.
Simon looks puzzled, then whispers to Tora, who whispers to Lily.
And commended of St. Paul.
The children all make a buzzing sound.
Get off!
They wave their arms about to beat off the imaginary bees. Cedric looks around to see what's happening. Gradually, the other guests also start to flap at the air.
One on your back!
Satisfy man's carnal lusts.
The flowers on a
dress,
they're attracting
bees.
Them.
I hate bees. I'm allergic.
There aren't any bees, you fool. Get out.
No, truly.
Get back.
I swell up.
Don't you see? They're trying to ruin my lovely wedding. Nasty, vicious creatures. Do something. Cedric, look at me. Do you see any bees?
Cedric turns and looks over at Simon, and the two smile at each other.
I said, look at me. Do you see any bees? Do you? Do you?
I do.
He knocks off her hat and she falls over.
All right. Got the little bugger.
It's on me!
Selma gets cake in her face.
Lord love a duck. I'm so dreadfully sorry. No.
She throws some back at the vicar. He ducks and it hits Aunt Adelaide.
Oh, my Lord. Your Highness.
Selma curtsies, but Aunt Adelaide rises, covered in green cake, and gestures to her footman to throw one at Selma. He misses and hits Mr. Ween. Mr. Giles laughs, and Mr. Ween pushes a cake into his face. Mr. Giles angrily removes the cake paper, then they both laugh, each covered in cake. The children grab more cakes. They throw them at the guests, who throw some back at them. Mrs. Blatherwick runs to protect the wedding cake.
Ah! Not the cake! Not the cake! Right!
Simon, bowling practice.
Cedric picks up a violin and uses it as a cricket bat to smash the cake Simon throws to him. It lands on Evangeline. She seems angry, gets up, and picks up a big cake and flings it at Cedric. It brushes his sleeve. She laughs and throws more, which he bats away with a violin.
Oh,
Evangeline, where are your manners?
Oh, sod my manners, you old trout. This is the first fun I've had in weeks.
The Lord.
Letty, my hair. Where is it?
Nugget, the little small thing.
Nugget!
You dreadful, awful, monstrous creatures.
Take your hands off my children.
Cedric, it's over. I won't spend another minute with this rabble, and I don't care how much the old hag is giving you. Letty, the lambs.
Letty picks up the yellow lamb and follows Selma, who storms off.
This is ruined. I haven't got another one.
A nice choice for a wife, I must say, Cedric.
I'm very sorry, Aunt Adelaide. You gave me no time to find anyone else.
As for your children, a lengthy spell in a corrective institution is long overdue. And you, Evangeline, I can see that you are as wild as the rest of them.
And proud to be. I love them, Lady Stitch, which is more than you do.
Insolence! I'd leave you here to rot, but I gave my word that I would raise you as my own, and I never, ever break my word. Come away now!
Aunt Adelaide's face is still covered in green cake. Upset, Evangeline glances round at the children, then follows Aunt Adelaide across the garden. Simon looks over at the wedding cake with its little figure of a bridegroom on top. Nanny McPhee is watching Simon. He considers, then runs after Aunt Adelaide.
Wait, Aunt Adelaide, wait! You agreed. You gave your word to our father that if you remarried before the month was up, you'd carry on supporting us.
I did.
So if he marries today, you'll have to keep your word, isn't that so?
Oh, you're wasting my time.
No. No. No, I'm not. He will marry today.
What?
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 Who?
He'll marry Evangeline.
Insist?
No, no, Aunt Adelaide. Evangeline isn't our sister.
Not your sister?
Of course she's not our sister.
Well, who is she then?
I'm his scullery maid.
What?
Evangeline, do you love Papa?
Of course not. I know my place. That wouldn't be right, I mean. Yes.
Cedric stares at her amazed. Lily runs up to him.
Papa, do you love Evangeline?
What are you saying? That would be totally improper. I mean, anything like that could never happen. I mean, obviously... Yes.
He looks embarrassed, then they beam at each other.
He's marrying a scullery maid?
Aunt Adelaide faints. Nanny McPhee bangs her stick on the ground and gold sparks fly. Clouds scurry across the clear blue sky, which turns dark. Snowflakes fall onto the wedding cake. A cold, bright light shines through the window down the long blue corridor into the children's brightly coloured, messy bedroom. Up in Nanny McPhee's attic room, pigeons ruffle their feathers in front of the round window in the turret. Into the empty study where the pink chair sits in the corner by the fireplace. Outside, the garden is covered in thick snow. Mrs. Blatherwick is thrilled.
Oh, never! Snow! Snow in August!
Mr. Weens and Mr. Giles' dark suits have turned white. Simon, also in white, looks over at Nanny McPhee. Now with smooth skin, tidy fair hair and no warts, she's still dressed in black as she watches the scene around her. She smiles at Evangeline, who grins shyly at Cedric. The vicar approaches him.
I take it then, Mr. Brown, that the young lady is not in fact the fruit of your loins? Because I'm here to tell you that the church would have to take a rather dim view of it if she were.
No, in fact... What happened was my son Simon is a very clever boy.
Evangeline!
For the record, whatever I may have said about stepmothers, that whole evil breed moment,
most emphatically does not apply to you.
This way.
Jolly good. If I may then invite you all to join us once more.
Hallelujah.
Oh, Nanny McPhee. I'm so nervous.
Deep breath.
I don't look much like the bride, do I?
You will.
Slender, pretty Nanny McPhee walked with Evangeline through the swirling snow. It circles around them as they walk slowly towards Cedric and the vicar. Cedric turns round and watches them walk up the path. He smiles at them joyfully. Magically, Evangeline's blue dress turns into a white lacy wedding dress with a long train. The snow becomes a fine veil that covers her face. The children stand at the side of the path and watch in amazement.
How's the reading coming along?
It's much better, but I still haven't got to the end of that story.
No need. You are the end of the story.
Nanny McPhee stands aside as Evangeline joins Cedric. Mrs. Blatherwick watches them with a tearful smile. Evangeline lifts the veil, and the couple stand side by side. Cecile, the donkey, blows her nose on a big white hanky and smiles.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered together to join together this man and this woman in holy matrimony.
Cedric and Evangeline turn to look at the happy children. Nanny McPhee takes her black hat off the snowman.
We can now noise and rejoice and sing praise.
Nanny McPhee watches with a wide smile, then looks up. Aggie's silver rattle comes tumbling through the sky and lands in her carry cot. Nanny McPhee appears in the study and makes a little bow to the pink armchair.
There is something you should understand about the way I work. When you need me but do not want me, then I must stay. When you want me but no longer need me, then I have to go.
Dressed in her black bonnet and long black cloak, Nanny McPhee makes her way down a path through a snowy field. The end.